Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
I'll tell you what, Danny, I think I pulled a muscle coughing this week in my back. It has been painful. Rib injury. That's a back rib injury that I have sustained coughing violently this week, hence my voice is low. I am fighting a sneeze right now, so that's probably affecting the sound of my voice. But the show must go on, so we shall do the show here. So I had some things I wanted to talk to you about. One of them is... is it Carlos Ghosn? Is it Ghosn from Nissan?
Ghosn.
What's his first name?
It's not...
Either way, it's inmate number, whatever. That's his name.
57372.
That wasn't... I actually wasn't trying to make a joke there. I legitimately forgot his name. But it's interesting in Japan. So this guy has just been accused, okay? Mm-hmm. He can't get out of prison. He's in prison till March. Like, he's been in prison since last year. By the time his trial rolls around, he'll have been in prison for 10 months. They've incarcerated. So this is white collar crime. And I think in America, there would be a lot less white collar crime if it was that way in Japan. Now, I don't know. See, this is...
You mean in the United States, it is in Japan. Yeah.
That's what I meant to say if I didn't say that. And so there is a presumption of innocence that we have in this country that's pretty good, though.
Yeah, you're right.
But the deterrent, I don't want to speak to the Gasson's...
innocence or guilt.
No, I don't want to weigh in on that. That's not the point of my comment. My point is that the deterrent, man, is we're going to lock your ass up if we think you're doing something wrong. That's a lot of legal loopholes there, a lot of legal wrangling there. But man, do you think Kerry Tolstad would have done all that nastiness or instituted all that nastiness or had people carry out all that nastiness at Wells Fargo?
Well, yeah.
If Kerry Tolstad didn't think she hightailed it on the first plane out of San Francisco back to Nebraska, which they have prisons.
In Nebraska.
Yeah, Nebraska. The person that...
They got them in California, too.
Like, one of the few people, the highest-ranking person to go to prison for all the shenanigans of 08, the whole economic debacle of the late last decade, was a bank president from Nebraska.
Midwest.
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't have any of the people from New Wall Street go to...
No. Yeah. We sacrificed a lamb from Nebraska to go to prison, not heaven forbid, Kerry Tolstad. So that's interesting to me. There's some other things that are interesting to me too. Like I want to keep on this kick on 2019 of getting a process. And there's some very teachable moments in the market this week. And there's some teachable moments that have been the first 3 weeks of the market. And just think about how painful this market has been for people who aren't... For the only word that popped into my head are financial planners, because financial planners don't know how to read a market. And by read a market, they don't understand how stocks or markets work. They're just buy and hold, long term, and whatever the course is. But that's easy when it's not your money, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to just spout those things off when it's not your money you're talking about. And so imagine the person right now that just got plastered in November and December, really. And then they got plastered by the markets, and now they're sitting out the first 3 weeks of the year, which have been really good. And so I saw something on Twitter, and Twitter can be a real cesspool if you let it be. But this what I'm about to read or talk about really encapsulates some thoughts I have, and then we'll get on to the controversial part of the show, and then we'll get on to a little bit more teaching, and a little bit more stock nerdery. But this person on Twitter says, if you were bearish on 1224 and you're bullish now, might I inquire what is different except price? And that question posed is so encapsulating of the problem with 99.8% of investors. And what do I mean by that? You're not flexible. Like this investing, so many people want to make investing black or white. And it really isn't. Whereas the law, you're breaking the law. I know there's interpretation. That's why we have a Supreme Court. But you're, for the most part, you're either robbing the store or you're paying at the cashier. Like there's very few in-betweens, right? Mm-hmm. With investing, you can change your opinion. But because the world wants to be so black and white with everything else, they take that same brush and try to come into the investment space with that. And it allows for no intellectual flexibility whatsoever, which is the most dangerous thing an investor can suffer from, is the lack of intellectual flexibility when it comes to markets. So when the person posed the question, might I ask what changed? It's price.
Well, yeah.
It's price that changed. And let me expand just a little bit further on that thought. Not only is it price that changed, it's understanding what a market represents. By the way, the person who said this is a very experienced, hell of a lot smarter than I am, individual. High qualifications. And so when you're understanding what the market really represents, a forward-looking vehicle. So what do you think got Jay Powell in hot water? Follow me, stock nerds and market lovers. So Jay Powell at the beginning of October comes out and tells people we're hiking come hell or high water. But he's looking at data that is in the rearview mirror. Then the market, being a forward-looking vehicle, sees what's happening to sales and earnings of some companies, and they start discounting stocks because they think that's where, because the market participants think that's where price is headed. That's where the economy is quote-unquote headed. And so that gets eventually, 3 months eventually, that gets Jay Powell's attention.
I changed my mind.
But I didn't get to it last week because it was too long of a show. But there's a great article that I've read in the past that I wanted to bring up, and I really should have. It's like, why do most economists miss the market downturns? Like, why do they miss it? And it's because you're looking at data that's all the way that's in the past, whether it's a month in the past, a quarter in the past, it's in the past. So you've got two sets of data you can look at as an economist or a market participant, right? You've got reports that come out from the government, such as the non-farm payrolls, PPI, CPI, those types of reports, but the most current report on the health of the economy or the state of the economy at that moment is the price of the markets.
Right.
Because the markets look forward about 6 to 8 months. Whether or not you believe that or not, stock nerds or market lovers, that's what got Jay Powell to change. It wasn't, you can be cynical and you can say he acquiesced to Trump. You can be cynical and say the market's rigged. You can be cynical all you want. But when you're cynical, cynicism's a disease, by the way. And you miss out on opportunity, whether it's in markets or life. Your cynicism has cost you. If you're a cynic for the majority of your life, or you've developed into a cynicism is a crippling disease that is 100% preventable. And so the people, it is. Cynicism is, there's no, I mean, you can be jaded. You know, life can kick you in the, and I don't think there's a person walking the earth that hasn't had the opportunity to have life kick them in the you know what, or have an opportunity to experience why cynicism. You know, you can give into it, but it really is a disease at the end of the day that cripples the mind. And so the cynicism that right now is in the markets is why I think the markets are going higher. Is the market looking forward 6 to 8 months, and that's why we rebounded off the bottom? Yeah, I do. I think the market's looking at a trade deal that may or may not get done. It doesn't matter, though. It's that the like if you lived in a vacuum and didn't know anything and you were just trading upon price and that's all the information you had, I think you'd be a much better investor. But because you cloud with and listen, 99% of the information that comes out on the news is worthless to an investor. And so it gets clouded. I mean, earnings and sales reports are the mother's milk of what makes stocks go higher or lower, and then understanding the trend in the price. And so when I say financial planners, like, and they don't have any knowledge of how stocks and markets work. It's not me being rude. I mean, it comes off as rude probably, but it's the truth. What I just went through, they have zero idea about. They have zero idea how to explain price and demand, or supply and demand, pardon me, of equities. They have zero understanding of what a market truly represents, that it's a price auction. And when X, Y, and Z got to a certain price, things started to go higher. Did things get quote-unquote too cheap? I don't know. Cheap is an opinion. And if you get out of the opinion game, get out of the cynicism, crippling phase of your life as an investor, I think things get a lot better. And I'm telling you right now, like, financial Twitter is a cesspool of bears. And you don't need to be a cheerleader for the bulls. I'm neither. I'm an observer of price, and I want to participate in the direction of the markets. Like, we participated in the downside in December, and we're participating now into the upside. And so there's nothing wrong with that. And so when someone poses the question, that question wasn't to me, by the way, but when someone poses the question, what's changed, and they say, is it just price? Stock nerds and market lovers, if something you eat gives you severe chronic pain or indigestion, but you love it, you know, or you believe in it, are you going to keep eating it if it's causing you that? So if you're short the market or you're not participating in the market, are you just going to keep thinking that your words into the wind of that is Twitter, or your thought process of trying to talk down the markets, is actually going to affect anything? Right. Like, you would stop doing the behavior that hurts you so much if given the choice. And so, like, well, what changed? Well, I used to really like spicy buffalo chicken wings, but as I've gotten older, I can't eat them, so I've had to change my behavior. Or coincidentally, you know, chicken wings are really freaking expensive, so I don't eat them anymore. So what changed? Price. I used to eat them every meal, and now I don't. Like, so many people get wrapped around the axle about, I have a position, and this is my position. And it's such ludicrousness. That's a word, right?
Don? Don?
Uh-huh.
I believe it's ludicrosity.
That voice you heard is the portfolio. Let me pause in a second.
Ludicrous. I'm going to write that down and look that up. I don't think that's a word.
That's totally a word. That voice you heard was Don Vandenborde, the portfolio extraordinaire from St. Augustine, Florida. Where are my manners, stock nerds, and market lovers? This is Your Money Radio. Dan Stort is who I've been talking to. Don Vandenborde, the portfolio god, is in St. Augustine, Florida. I'm Tim Razor. So we run Revere Asset Management, where we're a full-service, fee-only fiduciary that protects your wealth and tries to grow it. That is our mission in life. We're dual mandate. Protect wealth.
We're like the Fed.
No, we're better than the Fed.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Protect wealth, grow wealth. Right. Dual mandate.
Right.
And most of the accounts, you know, we work both retirement accounts, 401ks.
Our trust accounts, corporate.
Doesn't matter. We don't custody any assets. That's kind of a big deal. Get a hold of us at 855-REAL-WEALTH if you want to inquire about becoming a client of the firm, or Tim at Revere Asset, Don at Revere Asset, or Dan at Revere Asset. That's how you get a hold of us. So go ahead, Danny.
Well, I'd like to make it. So you made a very good point. You said, you know, what's changed price? You know, December, the market was going down hard. Price was going down. And in January, it appears to be rising, right? Well, what changed exactly is the price, but that's also risk. So in December, sure, it went down 8% in the S&P. I mean, if you were all in the market, you got hit, but you didn't know that it wasn't going to keep going down.
Right.
Likewise, so you want to wait to see, and you were talking about...
Hold on, you're ahead of me. Don't convolute my words.
Okay, so the one thing, though, is like you were talking about price only.
Yeah.
It's just like a car. You were making the analogy.
Yeah.
So if you've got a $50,000 car, normally, Then if it goes to 40 or if it goes to 60, that's a difference. Price changed.
Right.
Behavior will change.
So I set this up for you stock nerds and market lovers. I know a lot of you know this. But you a lot sometimes you can't get out of the thought process to just expand a little bit. Like some of you are so into the weeds and we love you for it. But it a lot and you can't even stand to have the conversation with your friends. Danny earlier today said and I know what Danny meant, so don't beat up Danny for this. Danny goes, "You don't like dumb questions." And I said, "No, that's not true at all. I don't like people in the market space that ask questions with a tinge of arrogance or I know it already. Like I'm just asking to get slapped on the back so you know that I know that we know that I'm smart. Like I can't stand that. There aren't any dumb
questions." That's all over Twitter too.
Yeah, and I don't believe there are dumb questions when it comes to the market space because the markets are counterintuitive. If somebody said, "Tim, why is a high put call ratio bullish for the markets? That doesn't make any sense. Shouldn't the market, the markets are going lower and you've got this, people are all buying puts. I should be buying puts." Well, that's the commonality. That's the common person thinking, but it's counterintuitive because it's a contrary indicator. That's a great question. It might appear dumb. That's a great question. I don't like the tinge of arrogance that comes with people that apply to markets. Look, if you want to do this for a very long time and you want to do this well, you have to be able to do this egoless. You can do it with confidence. Confidence is not ego. There's a huge difference. But you have to be able to execute confidently but have so little ego that you can say, "You know what? I was wrong. And if you want to live the 24 hours of my life, so without ego, so I thought I had a great stock in Altreason, which is ticker symbol TEAM. TEAM, I only had managed to get like a 3.3% gain out of the thing before I had to sell it because I was following my earnings rules. And I'm looking at this chart and I'm going, "Gosh darn it, this is a great looking chart." I internally go, "I know this thing's going to go higher." But because I'm not operating with my money. I'm operating.
Feeling.
It's not my money. It's the client's money.
Right.
And so they know I have rules to protect them in these types of situations, like these earnings situations. And so what do? I go and sell it because it didn't meet my criteria. It didn't have a 10% gain.
Right before earnings. Yeah. Right? The afternoon before earnings.
And so a few minutes before earnings, I end up selling it. Because it didn't have the 10% gain, or the dollar percent move wasn't what I had in it, so I couldn't even break even on it if it just went to that lower level.
The expected move was bigger than the gain we had.
Yeah, and so I sold it, and then it goes up to like 103 after hours.
About 10% after
hours. I'm
like,
"Oh, you got to be kidding me!" But then I looked up this morning; it was down 3 or 4%. I'm thinking, "God Almighty, okay." So dodged a bullet, But that wasn't. That wasn't me knowing that was going to happen. That wasn't me. I felt like a fool in the afternoon yesterday when it's up 10% without me. I felt great afterwards, and I'm no dumber or smarter. I was just following rules. And so you can do this without ego, and you can ask questions confidently. But if you want to break out of the skirt, there's a group of investors that keep funding their mistakes with a paycheck or an employer that
company
funds,
match
that does their 401k. Yeah, there's but once you separate from the active workforce and you slow down a little bit and you become retired, all of a sudden you've lost all your investing skill. I find we meet a lot of people that fit that mold. So I bring you this, stock nerds and market lovers. So the plunge in the S&P 500 last year, this is from the pages of Bloomberg Business Week, which I enjoy reading. And I enjoy reading it because I want to be in touch with what people are thinking, meaning like I don't have a good word for it, but mediocrity. What was the word Don used? Can we look on a notepad?
Ludicrousy, is that it?
Yeah, I'm looking for the ludicrousness.
Yeah.
Ludicrosity.
Ludicrosity.
I want you to spell that, Don.
L-U-D-I-C-R-O-S-I-T-Y.
There you go. So the plunge in the S&P 500 late last year, 19.8% from a September high to December low, wasn't quite enough to meet the traditional definition of a bear market. But if there's a silver lining for Main Street in the stock market turmoil the past few months, it's this. They now have a far more realistic idea of how much risk they're willing to take and a new appreciation for what portfolio diversification means. If I can just pause there, there is no amount of diversification that saved your portfolio in the downtrend, stock nerds and market lovers. If you tell me, well, I had more bonds and I did great, Tim, and I'm going to tell you, if you had more bonds and you did great, Tim, that was your quote to me, I'll tell you that from 2016 till the end of 2018, you underperformed the markets because you had more bonds and not enough equity. If you figured out halfway along the ride that my traditional Johnny Bag of Donuts strip mall advisor loaded me up with too many bonds and I didn't have enough equities, you probably figured it out three quarters of the way through and you switched to more equities and less bonds and then you got hammered. And so it's really tough when you go with a pie chartist, like a Fisher Investments is a pie chartist. Who are the other pie chartists out there? Fidelity is a pie chartist. Edward Jones. Who's the loser dome in St. Louis? What's that dome? Is that Edward Jones or is that who's got RJ? Where's RJ? RJ's Tampa.
Ray J.
Ray J's in Tampa with Jameis Winston and Crab Legs. And RJ. No. Ray J. RJ is Tampa. The empty dome is St. Louis. And I always get those confused. But they're all pie chartists. Fisher, Jones, Ray J. They're all pie chartists, and you got hammered because, you know what I mean, they're never wrong, right? Right, Danny? They've got their computer models. It's like AccuWeather when it's supposed to snow 6 inches and it actually is sunny and bright. AccuWeather. And so anyway, I move on. I digress from that. So I'm skipping. It's true. Many people don't know. Oh, here we go, Daniel. It's true, many people don't do a deep analysis of their portfolio until a hard knock forces them to pay attention. Oh, sounds like people in the robo space lately. While many of them are nervous now, few are in crisis mode, which makes this a good time for them to re-examine their portfolios. Skip ahead. Here we go. We should spend more time planning for volatility and potential losses than trying to predict the next downturn will happen, says Peter Lazaroff, Chief Investment Officer at PlanCorp. God, if something sounded corporate and ugly, it's PlanCorp, doesn't it? Are they doing investments or birthing?
Sounds like cookie cutter.
So let me examine this statement. So when we should spend more time planning for volatility and losses rather than trying to predict the next downturn, under the veil or the guise of his words, he's saying you can't time the market. And we've demonstrated this over and over again. If you get out of the words market timing and you get out of the words of when are the people that support price in the market leaving the market and you just follow their footsteps, it sounds a lot less nefarious, right, Daniel? Mm-hmm. Like a lot less tomfoolery like these Peter Lazaroffs want you to believe. And so what this guy is saying is, I don't know when to exit, neither do you, so we're just going to stay the course and I'm going to give you bonds.
What that's saying is, mm-hmm. let's prepare the client up front.
Yeah.
Let's get them emotionally okay with going down 25, 30%.
Right.
Let's get them ready and so that they just will stay the course and buy and hold.
Yeah, so when they lose 30% of their portfolio in a year, they'll be okay with it and they won't leave PeterLazarus.com. So, of course, this gets better.
There's another reason they do that. They set that up for compliance reasons.
Okay, so of course advisors warn against selling emotionally after a drop. So much wrong with this article. Many investors will want to buy stocks only get their portfolio right. When big market moves happen, there's a big opportunity to rebalance, says Greg Davis, CIO for Vanguard Group. Valuations, we'll get the Jack Bogle. We don't eulogize often on this show, but you'll want to hear what we have to say. Valuations are back to fair levels when it comes to U.S. equities. Pause. What the hell are fair levels? These are the things you say when you want to sound smart. There are a lot of dumb, smart people, and I'm going to contend that Greg Davis is one of them. Probably book smart out the wazoo. Magna cum sude, sade, latte. Latte. Probably the chief
black belt in finance.
Oh, no, black belt in everything. But dumb when it comes to markets. Because what he's saying here is when a big market move happens, a big opportunity, valuations are back to fair levels. What the hell? So there's two schools of thought here. He directed all of his people. Now he's Vanguard, so we've got a different take here. So he directed all of his people to either miss the big move higher when Greg Davis deemed stocks were too expensive, so we're done. We're out. They're too expensive. And then you miss You missed the world's, this country's greatest stock market movers. You missed them because you deemed them, because you don't understand fundamentals, sales, institutional support of the mother's milk of price. You don't understand markets. And you say, I deem this market to be too expensive. So you end up sitting out the last 3 years. Or I have deemed this market to be dangerous, so I'm going to sit out the next 2 years. And before you know it, you've missed out on a 50% move in the markets over 2 years because you don't know how to get out of the markets. You, anybody can get in. Like, anybody can start driving a car. Whether or not you do it well is a completely different story, Daniel.
Stopping at the red light's important.
Oh, yeah, this could be. And so we go on. It gets better. Sam Boyd. Oh, Sam Boyd, a 31-year-old financial planner and senior vice president at Capital Asset Management Group, says, so now there are a few things. Now, listen, I will tell you that I am not a person who believes in the word seniority, okay? Meaning that just because age doesn't mean you have gravitas. So I think Sean McVay of the Los Angeles Rams is proof of that. Was he 31, 33? So just because your age doesn't dictate your talent level is what I'm trying to say, stock nerds and market lovers. I don't believe that for one bit. But I will say in this arena, in the market, you do sometimes we need to lick your wounds a little bit. They build
experience
up a callus.
Counts for something.
Yeah, there is a little experience there. So I want to give Sam Boyd here his due. Sam Boyd, a 31-year-old financial planner and senior vice president at Capital Asset Management Group, which is right next to PlanCorp. It's one big block of people that wear tan pants and blue shirts. PlanCorp, Capital Asset Management Group. We wear tan pants, blue shirts, sell you phones. Right? Anyway. So says that when he sees high volatility, when Sam Boyd sees high volatility, he just hope it coincides with the end of his pay period so that his 401k contribution goes right into the market as it falls.
he wants a dollar cost. All that is trying to tell people don't worry, everything's fine.
But when you look at Sam Boyd, and Sam says, well, look at the lower left-hand side of the S&P chart and look at the upper right-hand side of the S&P chart. It's going higher. But you won't ever listen, stock nerds and market lovers, we are the minority. We know this. There's a thought that it's our thought, probably your thought too, that what if you could miss several 20-25% downturns, and when you get the thing that you don't think is going to happen in your investing life, such as the mid-90s pullback, if you could miss the dot-com implosion, if you could miss the economic downturn of last decade.
Or even just half of it.
You're going to be a lot better off than the Sam Boyds of the world. Now, if you want to be the Sam Boyds of the world and just let somebody else drive your car and run your life for you, be a passive investor because that's what you're signing up for. And maybe that's what Sam Boyd wants. Maybe Sam Boyd doesn't have the thought that as he gets older, Sam Boyd, if he's 47 with the same mindset, well, of course, he's got the pie chart, Danny, so he's diversified. It doesn't matter because Sam Boyd will go, well, I can lose 50% and I've still got time to make it up. And 10 years go by, Sam Boyd's 57 and he's just getting back to even. A lot of you probably heard Sam Boyd, 31-year-old financial planner, and stopped right there and said, damn millennial. I don't think that's the right attitude. And I mean that with all the sincerity of my heart. I really don't. Because there's experience that comes with this. It's not all just experience. There's a lot of good younger, stock traders or people who can read markets. Sam Boyd's probably just not one of them. But that's the mantra, stock nerds. Like that spewed out there on television and FinTwit, in websites, on anything that we got asked for a brochure the other week, the most worthless piece of garbage that you could ever produce as a firm for somebody, because it's designed to do is to make you feel good, not give you honest, truthful answers. And when, quite frankly, people ask us for brochures, all it tells us is that you're indoctrinated into what traditional Johnny Bag of Donuts strip mall advisors want you to believe, which is dangerous. We think it's dangerous. So, man, I've got more. I don't think it makes for good radio anymore. I think I've made my point. But this is what's happening right now, where I think a lot of people have either, they're like, wow, the market, like everyone's talking about this great rebound, and they're looking at their 401ks or IRAs, and they're not back, or they sat it out. Like they got out towards the end of last year because it's going to be doom and gloom and Trump's going to finally burn the country. Like the country's going to act, the U.S., like Florida's going to fold in, you know, into Nebraska, and California's going to fold into Colorado, and somehow they're going to cut us from Canada, and Maine's going to fold in. We're just going to go implode into the center of the earth. and so it might happen. I mean, it's a market, right? Anything can happen. But what I want you to take away from that is that just that, it's a market. And look, if you've sat this out the last 3 weeks, you need to pick and choose your battle space. Do I think we're at a pausing point here? Potentially, we're at a pausing point. You need to digest a great move. That's just common, you know, like that's very conservative of me to say. But because there's so many bears out there that have not given up on shorting this market, when they finally have to capitulate and buy back in higher, or if you're a money manager who's told everybody to sit out and now you're down, you're not even down, you're just 0% for the year and the market's at 5, what are you going to do? I mean, how many times in the last 21 days can you, if you, or longer, if you add in last, well, the end of the last week of last year,
yeah, December, yeah.
How many days can you keep telling people in your firm, people on TV, people that are your clients, it'll come back, it'll come back, it'll come back, when they start losing faith in you? And that plays on their psyche, and eventually they just start buying because they got to chase it now. I mean, think about the reaction to Netflix. Netflix is a stock that's up 50% off the lows. Still off the highs, though, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's only corrected a percent or two or several percent after it's...
missed earnings.
Yeah, I don't know if it's
missed. Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus, is that strong.
Guidance
like,
forward, yeah.
Yeah, like that's a strong stock. Will Netflix go lower if the market goes lower? 80% of stocks will do that. Yeah, probably. Probably go, like if it gets really bad, probably goes all the way back to 300. But right now, as I'm talking to you, it's not. It's trading 339. It's gone up 15%, Danny. 50%, pardon me. And it's down 4. So if you held through earnings, You now, if you from New Year's, I mean Christmas Eve or whatever you bought it, you're sitting on 40, you know, 36%, no, 46%. Gosh, I suck right now. So recognize the market you're in. It's not that people like Sam Boyd or Greg Davis, it's not that they're not smart or nice people. It's that they can't recognize the market they're in because they're not flexible. Not everything is a bull market. In Sam Boyd's world, everything's a buying opportunity. Steadfastly. Did I get that right, Don?
Steadfast.
No.
It was perfect.
That's what I'm looking for.
Steadfastly?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You know, as far as those guys go, and all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
They're one-trick ponies.
Like, there are times where you should not be in the market, people. Even if it is a 401k or IRA, there are absolutely times you shouldn't be in the market. And then there are times you absolutely should be.
And by the way, just like CNN, to be able to get to do those interviews and stuff, their firm may not be advertising in this week's edition of Bloomberg.
Right.
But I bet you anything, if you look at last week or next week, They'll have a half-page ad somewhere.
How do you become sources? Just advertise.
Yeah.
How do you become a source? Advertise. So, look, there are some things I want to discuss. We've got a watch list talk that we want to get to. Reversion to the mean talk is interesting only because of Tilray. If you've been following Tilray, which is a cannabis stock, Tilray shot up earlier this week, and then like the next day, it pulled back to its moving averages, and that kind of gets into chasing. But I'm a little bored by that. I actually want to get to talk about Bogle.
Okay.
All right. So interesting about
John, right?
Yeah. So Bogle, where I don't like to do this kind of radio where we talk about like someone who passed away, unless it was someone we knew. Okay. And the reason why is because that's not why you tune in. You tune in to actually get, I believe in, someone might be mad at me. 90% of investing, I believe, is psychological. That's why I focus so much on the mental aspect of investing. A monkey can do the button pushing to get the price, you know, to get the order entered.
To buy the trade.
Yeah.
It's buy the stock. Yeah.
But to hold through what is a normal pullback, but because you bought too much, you don't know what's a normal pullback and you miss the move. Investing is 90% psychological. And I believe if you can master that, you can master a lot in the markets. But I digress. Don's got a really interesting take about John Bogle. And I think a few things. When we had this is the one thing we've had a discussion about regarding this show. As you know, stock nerds, I don't like to plan it with Danny and Don because I want their genuine reactions. And, but I did bring this up to them the other day on the phone saying, I don't think I want to talk about this because it's disingenuous to me where, people just death in general, death is an interesting thing because people eulogize in a different way than in which they lived, meaning that someone you didn't care for has passed away, and all of a sudden you like the person, or you feel a tinge of guilt when you're by yourself and looking in the bathroom mirror. And I choose to tell people the way I think. Danny knows this to my detriment, and I live a life to which I can
Look yourself in the mirror
to the best of my ability. I can do that, and I'm not perfect. I'm not even close to perfect, but I try, and I just look no further than John McCain's memorial,
yeah.
You know, and so a lot of people that have eulogized or had words to say, because that's the thing you do, right? When somebody dies, you have to say something about it. And I don't think we have to, even though we're saying words right now. I don't think we have to. I don't think Bogle, like we vilify passive investing and for good reason. And so, but I think it's important to acknowledge what he did. I think the first thing that comes to my mind isn't the obvious. Dude had a 20-year career at his prior employer, rose up through the ranks to become the CEO, and then got fired. I mean, he spent 20 years of his life building someone else's brand, got fired, and then had the gumption and the fortitude to go start something like Vanguard. I think that deserves all the kudos in the world. I mean, you're 20 years in. Like most people, 20 years into something, or their psyche is so defeated. So the intestinal fortitude it takes to go do that, I think, is really important. The second part, I think that we are aligned with Bogle, and maybe one of the few areas we're aligned. Maybe there's more. But the one I think that we can be aligned on is we hate traditional Wall Street. He took advantage, just like we do, in different ways. He took advantage and created a market space of low fees. I don't think Bogle is a great investor. I don't think it's right to call him an investor. He created a market space, not unlike Charles Schwab, mm-hmm. where they eradicated fees.
He's selling products. He's selling packaged products, mm-hmm. ETFs, but it's discount. So he put pressure on all of Wall Street to bring prices down.
So pause there. And I think it's really important to just acknowledge that's why a lot of Wall Street hated him.
Oh, yeah.
He democratized it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Made it a commodity.
But
they were their good old boys club.
But I think what Don has to offer here is really salient. And I think I should let Don talk now because I've rattled on enough. I'm sorry about that, Don.
There's two things that, first of all, kudos to Bogle. I saw one estimate that he saved investors $175 billion over the last 45 years. And as you said, basically made everybody compete with him. And it's a fantastic legacy. But we have a fundamental disagreement with him about the all-in, all-the-time approach to the market. Yes, long term the market goes up, but the long term is a combination of short and intermediate terms that can just be devastating. to your portfolio. So,
or when you need the money. Yeah.
Or when you need the money, the timing is everything. I talked a little bit about that sequence of returns last week in the podcast and how important that is as you approach.
Can you repeat that, Don? I think it bears repeating, the sequence of returns. Can you?
Yeah. The ultimately, there are a lot of statistics that show that your ultimate success or failure, as far as what you're going to, the amount that you're going to be able to tap from your nest egg during retirement, is dictated by the returns of the first 3 years after you retire. If you would have retired in 2007 and then watched that 50% drawdown, what was left after that is what you're supposed to start drawing on for the rest of your retirement. And it's going to, and it's 50% less than you thought it was going to be the 3 years prior when you started. It can just be brutal. And that's why we have a self-discipline in place for everything that we have in house. But Bogle was popular. His idea was fantastic. But imagine if Vanguard was a Japanese company and he was Japanese and he tried to sell the same approach in a market that still hasn't recovered from its 1989 highs. Would John Bogle be an investing legend, or would he just be another guy with a great idea whose time hadn't come because he was pushing it in Japan? And you can't, if you stay the course in Japan, you're still down from where you were in 1989. And that's no guarantee in any market. U.S. has always come back. Sometimes it's taken 10 to 15 years for it to come back. Japan has never come back. 28 years later, and we're still well below the 1989 high. The other thing is, if you're going to take that approach that you're going to just be a long-term and you're going to stay in, you got to realize that really what Bogle did is create the least expensive way to have a 50% drawdown. That
no, let that sink that, in. Don, will you say that one more time, please? And
I'm not being derogatory by saying that.
I don't think you are.
I mean, the fact is that, yes, he saved investors billions, but what is a 50 basis point savings on your product if your product is down 50% over the course of 24 to 30 months? You can feel good that you're in the least expensive product, but you still lost 50% of your money. So
you did it efficiently, though.
You did it efficiently. You did it in the least cost manner. Good for you. But
and I don't think that tarnishes from any. I don't even think it's disrespectful to have that disagreement. Therein lies the discussion we had on our morning call a few days ago, where I don't think that's.
Well, and here's the other thing. We use Vanguard ETFs all the time.
Of course we do.
If we want exposure, but we don't just buy
but
and
that
hold.
That doesn't make us just because we use Vanguard. By the way, I don't. From what I read, he was opposed to ETFs because he thought it encouraged too much trading.
Oh yeah, right,
and they right. only Vanguard only got into the ETFs after he retired in 2000.
Yeah.
And so, but just saying that, well, we use Vanguard ETFs, so we're not, I know what point you were trying to make, but that doesn't make us.
I'm saying they're a tool.
No, you can use a passive investment as a tactical tool.
There it is. That's exactly it. And so you don't have to go along for the big drawdown just because there comes a point, and look, we don't use mutual funds here. I mean, unless we're forced to, when we have, there's some 401ks that we manage that they only allow you that mutual fund option. Mm-hmm. But even then, you can find low fees, you can find low fee funds that do the same thing. But there comes a point, Don makes a really salient point, that a lot of people want to, I'm doing this at the least amount of cost, but there's no strategy applied. You could have the best tool, you know, people who are hobbyists or professionals and see hobbyists, like woodworking comes to mind. They've got a garage full of the most expensive tools, but they can't make anything. You know, like you've got great tool like Vanguard and a whole bunch of other people have some great mutual funds and ETFs, and they're low cost. But just because they're low cost doesn't mean you can make money or generate wealth with them on your own, because everything is designed to keep you in. Do you think Vanguard wants you to take your money out periodically to protect your wealth?
No, because they don't make money.
Yeah, like people, nobody mentions this, but we do. But very few people mention this, that they, for all the things that Jack Bogle did or Fidelity did to reduce fees on ETFs, to go, they did zero cost ETFs. Now everyone's trying to match them. But at the end of the day, they do all that. They're not. Do you realize what that really is? Jack Bogle or John Bogle? It's Jack. John, right? It's both.
John Bogle.
I've heard him called Jack. It's kind of like Jack. John Kennedy.
It's John or Jack.
Yeah, it's John or Jack. Danny's laughing at me. It's like Kennedy, man. It was Jack. Like if you're Chris Matthews, he was Jack Kennedy. If you're everybody else, it was John. So I digress. He was the Sam Walton of finance. Sam Walton, not out of the graciousness of his heart, did low prices. He did low prices because he knew what to attract customers, which coincidentally is not a bad thing. Jack Bogle was a capitalist. But if you took your money from Vanguard periodically, I don't think that would have made Jack very happy because you're his customer. That meant you went to cash and you just kept it out of the markets and he's not collecting his low-cost fees. He's a volume producer. Walmart's a volume producer. Coincidentally, high fees doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get great alpha either. The only way you can, one of the few ways you can differentiate your portfolio from a lemming, from being just steered by the market's winds, is to actually have a sell discipline. Don, give folks just one rule. If they've never engaged in this thought process, we get new listeners every week. Give them one rule that would say, you know what, maybe you want to take your foot off the gas a little bit.
The only rule that you need to follow to avoid financial ruin is to not own any investment when it's below its declining 200-day moving average.
There you go.
If you did nothing else, if you said I'm going to completely not trade, I really don't want to pay a whole lot of attention to the markets, just once a week on a weekend, learn how a stock chart works, look at a 200-day moving average, which is the sum of the closes of the last 200 days divided by 200, and it creates a line on a chart. If the price is above that, you got nothing to worry about. If it's below that, you should start thinking. Because the brutal drawdowns in 2000 to 2002 and 2007 to 2009 and the 20% drawdown that we saw just in December or the third quarter of 2018, fourth quarter of 2018, they all have one thing in common. At some point, they're breaking the 200-day moving average line, and that's your decision point.
All right, so stock nerds, Don's got a little bit of a watch list. I do too. Want to share it with you in a minute. If you're not familiar with the format of our media, 5 days a week we do a video. It's on revereasset.com. It's nothing but pictures, price, where we think markets are headed, and what we've done. We don't charge you for it. We don't even make you register. If you've never watched our videos, they're just free. Because we don't believe in spamming you. If you ever call us because you just have a question, we'll never call you back unless you want us to. We exist for stock nerds and market lovers and those so inclined who want to become clients of the firm because they want strategy, they want help, they want to be included in the process, not talked down to by the Sam Boyds. Then you're more than welcome to join us. We would love to have you. Everything we do is pro-client. But just go to Revere Asset. I didn't realize how many people don't watch the videos and only listen to the podcast, or how many people listen to the watch the videos and don't. You know what I mean, Danny? Can you clear that up?
You don't know how many people watch the daily videos but don't listen to the podcast, and then you don't know how many people just listen to the podcast.
Yeah,
don't
vice
watch the
versa.
Videos.
Yeah, I somehow that got tangled up in my head there, but it's a lot. Or people don't know that we're a full service, fee only. Fiduciary, which is a big deal. I didn't realize how many people didn't know that. So we exist for you. So what Don's talking about, we talk about every... You can go back to our December videos and see exactly what we were doing, how we were 90% cash with a 10% short. You can go back. We don't ever pull videos when we're wrong. There's no reason to do that. But Danny has a portal he goes into. It's where he's... It's where he's sealed up at night. He goes into a portal, Don. No, Danny goes into a portal.
A pod.
And he answers questions for stock nerds and market lovers. And Danny has a few that are really salient. And then when Danny's done with that, we'll do the watch list. Maybe Don's got another rule, things he's looking for the coming week. And then we'll probably end the show. What do you think, Daniel?
I think that's a great idea, Tim.
Done and done. Go ahead.
Okay, first question that I got, should I move my investments if I change my state of residency? So this guy said, look, I'm 70 years old, got IRAs, 529 plans for the grandchildren. I just moved. I've been retired for 10 years. Just moved from a state with an income tax to a state that doesn't have an income tax. But more importantly, I just moved from my financial advisor that I've been with for years. And, you know, do I need to change? In other words, since I moved cities and states, do I have to change advisors?
Right.
And so my answer was, look, if you're happy with your current advisor, you shouldn't have to move unless he has some type of restriction. With technology nowadays, you can manage and have clients in every state and even foreign countries.
We have clients in every state and foreign countries.
We actually just had to get licensed in three more states because we got new clients. So we've got a lot of long-distance relationships. I said, regarding your tax question, you may want to update your pro. So he said, do I need to do anything or anything for tax reasons? And I said, you may want to update your account profiles, especially on your IRAs, because when you take distributions, you may have already set it up to automatically withhold 5 or 10% state withholding tax. You don't have to withhold that anymore because you're in a different state now. I said, lastly, even though I'm not a big fan of muni bonds, which I'm not for a whole lot of reasons, now your universe has gotten much bigger. So in a taxable state, there's only five states that are tax-free now, you know, income tax-free. And so California, their muni bond market is to Californians and states that have no income tax, okay?
Right.
So we're in Texas here. We can buy muni bonds from any state in the country.
Yeah.
Because it's free. But in Wyoming, people from Wyoming can get the state tax-free muni bonds, plus people from Texas, Tennessee, and income tax-free states. So Wyoming, because their population is small, actually has a very small market. California, on the other hand, because their population has a bigger market. The point is that now his muni bond market has gotten national, not just limited to his home state, plus a few others.
Nice.
So those are the few things. All right, that's one. Here's a second one. I know Tim's going to love this one. Should I do all indexed annuities or leave some in my 401k?
Indexed annuity is like saying, should I drink the water in Mexico and not bring a bottle of Kaopectate? Or should I maybe drink some bottled water and bring a bottle of Kaopectate? Jesus.
Okay. So anyway, so my quick answer is no and no. But he said, look, I'm retiring at 63 and planning to live on my savings at 66 when I hit full Social Security. But then I got to decide whether I'm going, do I leave some money in my 401k and invest the rest in an indexed annuity, or should I invest everything in the indexed annuity? So apparently he's got a salesman that's got him wrapped around. Anyway.
Hold on. Can you explain why an indexed annuity is better? Or do you do it in your answer?
I'm about to.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So I said, I'm not a big fan of indexed annuities for various reasons, but you need to understand all the pitfalls. The two main ones, long surrender penalties and you're locking up your money, plus subpar returns. So when you really break it down, they're designed to pay about 3% annually. I said, the sales pitch that you'll get most of the gains, but none of the losses. It's true you get none of the losses, but you won't get nearly most of the gains. And remember, the illustration, quote, illustration, is just that. It's hypothetical.
Can you
tell? Hypothetical.
Can you? So when they say with an annuity, because the big sales pitch is income for life.
Well, So what I told them is, I said, look, inside, so you can create your own annuity, right, your own income, if necessary. But here's the thing about an annuity with the insurance company. You give them a lump sum. Say you give them $500,000. They go, okay, based on your age and your life expectancy, we'll give you this much. We'll give you $3,000, $4,000 a month, whatever it is. Now, if you get hit by a bus next month, we keep the lump sum.
You lose it.
You lose it. Your heirs don't get it.
But that amount is dependent upon how much you put in on there. So when they so when they say income,
it's
for
your
life,
money. It's so here's the bottom line is, you've got to live about 5 years past your life expectancy to, quote, win on an annuity once you annuitize
right.
it. Okay? So you're trusting an insurance company, you know, that's fine for some people who want to check their brain at the door and don't want to be active and feel like they can't handle it. But if you have someone manage it with good strategy, you can create your own income for life. And by the way, if you've got an emergency and you need to take a little extra out of your IRA at one point, you can say, hey, I need my AC blew up, send me an extra $4,000. Once you turn on that annuity with the insurance company, you can't start changing it around and changing the cash flows. So it's an irrevocable decision once you do it.
But a lot of people don't understand that because all they say is income for life.
And they think it's,
But most people, because there's no follow-up to those commercials, most people don't realize it's income for life based on what you put in there.
Based on your money.
So if you didn't have a lot of money to go in with.
You're not getting a lot of money. Yes.
Your standard of living is about to go down.
Yeah.
Fancy feast for all.
Yeah. Okay, then I said...
Didn't get that, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Fancy,
I
got, you got the meow?
Yeah, cat, meow.
Oh, you did get it.
I did it, okay. Now, I would not leave... Now I'm talking about the 401k because he's saying about leaving. I said, I would also not leave my nest egg in my 401k, but directly roll it into an IRA rollover with very few exceptions. I said, there are many reasons for this. Control of your distributions, control of the tax withholdings, because 401k, they automatically withhold 20%. IRA, you can withhold 5, 10, 20, you can do it, 0, you can do whatever you want and make up for it on your, you know. Also, you virtually have limitless investment choices, and it's a much lower fee structure. So whatever you do, you don't want to leave your money. It's your old 401k when you retire. Roll it into an IRA rollover.
Okay.
Almost likely you're not going to want to do an annuity. You'd rather have good look. And so here's what I told him. I said, look, in my opinion, you need to separate the strategy from the products. Products benefit the broker, while strategy, if solid, is a better way to go. So I said, you want a fee-based advisor with no conflicts of interest that's a fiduciary. Ask whoever who is giving you advice, are you a fiduciary? Understand how they're getting paid. Are you paying them directly yourself, or are they getting it paid from the company with the product or from a third party? You know, my dad used to always say, follow the money and you'll find your answer.
All right. So what's your third one?
The last one, let me see which one's better. I got two more, but I'll do one. Okay. So this is actually a very good one.
Okay.
This guy's asking me, he says, look, I'm beyond the income limit to deduct an IRA, can't deduct it. So why would I do, like a non-deductible IRA, you know, versus just doing it a regular account with capital gains? In other words, if I do a non-deductible IRA contribution, I'll pay ordinary income tax later, is what he's thinking, versus paying capital gains. I said, you know, great question. First, there are no income limits on an IRA unless you have a 401k at work. So if you're not contributing to a 401k at work, you could be making $1 million a year and put in a deductible IRA. However, if you are doing a 401k at work, then you can't deduct it. But the portion of the contributions you put in there are never taxable. It's just the growth or the deductible contributions. But here's the thing. He's asking what the variables are, what's the pros and cons. He's right that capital gains are lower. And if you're at a higher tax rate, 35, 40% income, meaning capital gains may be a better way, but you don't get that tax-deferred growth because you're paying the capital gains as you sell stuff and as you go versus the IRA being tax-deferred. But here's the other thing. So an IRA is bulletproof from creditors, and it does grow tax-deferred. So if you could tell me what the tax rates are going to be later, it's an easier answer. Also, some people in the legislature, in Congress now, are actually talking about making passive investment gains, dividends, capital gains, just like ordinary income. They're talking about making the same tax rates. Then the IRA looks a lot more promising. The bottom line is, normally, the younger you are and the longer you have time to let it compound, the better you are in an IRA, whether it's deductible or not.
But you still need to sell discipline within that IRA.
I'm just talking about taxes now. Okay. So the older you are, you don't have time for it to compound.
Right.
So if you're older and just about to retire, I'd probably do the capital gains route. Plus, I know what the taxes are at least in the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
So the closer you are to retirement, and the less time you have it to compound, I probably wouldn't do the IRA.
All right. Donald, what do you think about markets? You got some words of wisdom, and then give me one stock off your watch list. I think we...
No, I'm here. I still like Workday.
Okay.
You talked about Team. That was a... Man, if you'd have looked at that after hours and looked at where it traded down to today, you never can tell about the numbers. It's the reaction to the numbers. And some of the software stocks got hit along with it today, but have recovered. Workday held up pretty well, like a champ. It's been one of my favorites for a while. I want to make another comment on Jack Bogle. You know, something that I wish he would have done, or somebody would take up a mantle, and that's to make 403Bs ERISA compliant the way 401Ks are, because people that are stuck with 403Bs continue to get screwed into these annuities. And it's because nobody's bitching the way they were about 401Ks and excessive fees in there. So all these people that are federal employees or state employees and are stuck with these, it's like nobody's carrying the torch for them.
Yeah. Until it affects somebody with a loud enough voice, they don't care.
Well, I'll tell you what's truly funny is that they're coming out with this fiduciary rule and or the best interest rule and really taking aim at retirement accounts, IRAs, and 401Ks and commission products in there. And they're right, it's wrong. But all the government pension plans, 403Bs, the only thing you can own is mutual funds and annuities.
That's what Don's saying.
I know. I'm clarifying. I'm just saying. Oh. But it's like, do what I say, not what I do. It's amazing that they want to go after the private sector when they're doing it even worse in their own.
If you're in Congress, you can insider trade, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
That's why Congress has such a low approval rating.
Right.
What else you got, Don?
Let's see. Zscaler is another good software stock that's holding up pretty well, and PayPal continues to be one of my favorites.
Awesomeness. Stock nerds, I'll tell you what, Danny, do me a favor, roll the credits, and then I'll give a stock here and some thoughts.
All right, folks, if you like what you heard, please tell a friend, tell a neighbor. They can check out our work at revereasset.com. You can tell them, we promise you we won't spam you or market you in any way. You'll get our short market video newsletter in your inbox every day the market's open, and then you'll get this podcast on the weekends, usually Saturday morning. If you want to call us old, if you want a portfolio, complimentary portfolio review, you can email any of us. It's dan@revereasset.com, tim@revereasset, or don@revereasset, or you can call us old school at 855 Real Wealth.
So there's a real easy way, stock nerds, to remove all the nonsensicalness from maybe your analysis of the markets if you are looking for maybe a better process. And one of those, Don talked about it, you know, hey, as long as you're above the downtrending, or as long as you're above the 200-day, you're fine. Yeah, that's how you avoid extreme catastrophic moves. Exactly. Don's spot on. He didn't need my verification for that. It's not what I'm trying to get at. But if you're wondering, like, should I delve into the markets, maybe the S&Ps, the Qs, or a stock? If you have a 21 exponential moving average, and Don's going to do this on his video this weekend. So if you go to revereasset.com, and it's right on the front page now, like just the market update. Just click on that link right on the front page, and Don will give you his 21 over 21. And if there are 21, when the market is contracting,
sometimes there's less. Yeah.
There's less, but 21... fundamentally, top 5% of the market fundamentally, and then they're over their 21 exponential moving average. And the 21 exponential moving average, be it on a daily or a weekly chart, is the mean of the markets, the mean of the stock. And so when they say things revert to the mean or will trend away from the mean, if you get typically two closes over that 21, that's an uptrend phase that has begun. It doesn't mean it's going to go straight up, though. And if you get two closes below the 21, it's a downtrending phase. So if you're a buy the dipper with a bad habit and you see two closes below the 21 on something, maybe instead of keeping buying the dip and martingaling your account, you can look that up, you just stop. And that's something you can do different in 2019. I'll give you one.
Give us one.
I like Wing. W-I-N-G.
Aren't you getting too old in those buffalo wings?
No, that was an example. All right, stockers, we love you. Be kind, and we'll see you next week on Your Money.